What if your phone was also your PC?
I think it's really the only way you're going to really eliminate the PC is to just put it in the phone.
And what if you could upgrade your laptop without having to buy a new keyboard, case, and display?
Instead of throwing away your $300, $400, $500 US dollar laptop, you could just buy a CPU card upgrade for $50 and keep on doing that year after year.
We'll hear from two people working on projects that could change the way we use mobile computers, coming up on LPX. Welcome to the first episode of LPX. I'm Brad Linder, editor of Lilliputing.com. I spent most of the last decade writing about tiny computers, including netbooks, notebooks, tablets, smartphones, and miniature desktop computers. But before I started the website, I used to work as a radio journalist, and I interviewed people for a living. And I kind of missed that, so my plan for LPX is to do interviews with people doing interesting things with technology. Later in this episode, we're going to hear from someone working on a project that would pack the guts of a computer into a $50 card that you could use as a desktop, notebook, or tablet, and which you could swap out for a different card without having to change any of the other parts of your computer. But first, when I was wandering the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show in early January, I saw a lot of products from big companies with thousands of employees like Samsung, Sony, and Intel. But there were also a lot of smaller companies working on products that might never be released, and Shane Lewis had one of the most intriguing devices. It's called the Nitro Duo, and basically it's a pocket-sized computer. Actually, it's more like two computers that share the same body. Lewis took the guts of an Android smartphone with an ARM processor and the hardware you'd find in a cheap Windows tablet or notebook with an Intel chip, and he put them into a case with a 5-inch display. Press a button, and you can switch between operating systems without rebooting, because they both can run at the same time, or you can put one to sleep when you don't need it. I caught up with Shane Lewis a few weeks after CES to find out more about why he created the Nitro Duo.
I need a laptop when I travel, and I use that laptop for my business. It has software on there that is only available on a Windows-based PC. And yet, at the same time, I also carry around an Android smartphone. And it has applications on there that are very well done and very well executed by the Android operating system. And I've seen the Windows mobile series phones and stuff, but they don't really run that x86 application. They're not really a PC. And for me, since they don't really do the part that a smartphone does really well, that Android does really well, it just didn't make sense for me. And so I ran the idea about some really just by friends and family, and they're like, oh, I would love to have one of those. So we decided to build a prototype and take it to CES and see what kind of reaction we got. And so basically what it is, it brings in the Android ARM-based system, and it puts it in the same package with a Windows-based PC running, like you said, a mobile SoC. And it allows you to have that laptop or mobile computer running Windows in the same device with your Android smartphone. And so the idea is to kind of combine the two into one, yet not limit you on the capabilities of the two. For instance, the ARM-based Android is quite a bit less power than the Intel version of. So you could run Android on the Intel processor, but you wouldn't get the battery life like you could with just running on strictly ARM. So what we did is try to build something that would give us that best of both worlds, experience with Android and Windows, yet not compromise any of the features.
And we've seen, you know, a number of devices over the last couple of years. I mean, people have been dual booting, say, Linux and Windows on a laptop for a long time. And recently, we've seen a lot of Chinese tablet makers have these dual OS things that they have an Intel Atom processor, and you can choose whether you want to run Android or Windows. This is a little bit different because it's you have a completely different hardware for two computers that just happen to share a screen and a case and some buttons and things. And that allows you to do things like run both operating systems at the same time and switch back and forth between them with the press of a button, or shut down one altogether and just run the other. And I think you sort of touched on that a little bit, but what are the advantages to having sort of the two systems in one?
So the idea here was that at any time, I could have access to my laptop PC, which would be in a hibernate mode, right? So if I got a phone call and someone said, hey, I need to see that file you've been working on, I could quickly sit down, open up my laptop, and have access to that application very quickly. It would just come out of suspend mode, and I would have access to it. From the Android side, it's always on. So you hit the button, it comes up, and you can, you know, use Google Maps, or you can look at your email, or whatever you need, you would typically do on your smartphone. So it's always on. So the Nitro Duo is meant to have that same functionality where you may not have the Windows side always booted, and it does use quite a bit more power when both systems are live. But if you have the Windows in suspend mode, and you have the ARM live all the time, it would get near the same battery life that a typical ARM-based smartphone would have. But if you need it, you can wake it up and it's a full computer at your fingertip. And you can dock it and then get multiple monitors. You can get keyboard, mouse, and Ethernet, and the type of things you would expect to find on a PC. So,
And part of the reason that I was so taken by this product was, you know, I was going to CES. I'm looking at the latest products from, you know, big name companies, and they've got thousands of employees. You know, your Samsung's there and Intel is there. And then I turn the corner and I see you at this little booth with this little thing you basically built with your own two hands. Yeah. How does that happen?
Oh, you know, I'm professional EE, so I've been doing a lot of that stuff for other companies for a long time. And I left a company called Black Diamond back in 2009 and took some time off and started. Originally, SL Interface was started way back in 04, 05. We were going to build a tablet PC that was for the gamer market. And we didn't really get the funding we wanted to start that. But the technology that was in that was very applicable to the rugged defense sector. And so my partners and I started a company called Black Diamond Advanced Technology. And that took off. And I left that some few years later, 09, took some time off and restarted SL Interface back up as just a sort of a design services. So we kind of do similar stuff all the time for other customers. And we thought we continually are getting asked to build smaller and smaller computer systems. And believe it or not, I mean, you look in the makerspace today, you can see some really amazing stuff that people are just building with off-the-shelf hardware and can really compete with the bigger companies that are custom engineering those devices. And so we leverage from that, right? So we leverage from that makerspace, and we build these custom computers for an industrial need, for maybe a robotic arm, or for built on a vehicle, or maybe just for the individual to carry. And so building those, we're like, hey, you know, there's no reason why my phone can't also be my PC. So what we did is we said, hey, let's just build a prototype, see how well it works, take it to the show, and see if other people like it as well.
And what kind of reaction did you get?
You know, it was a mixed bag. And so the idea is putting a PC in your phone and having the functionality of both. And what we would typically get is they either would get it right away and say, oh, I want one of those. Or they would say, I don't have any need for that at all. I don't even know why you're here doing that. And so the most people that seemed to got the most alarmed by it, where we had some of Microsoft folks come by the booth, and they were literally like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, we're building a phone that is a PC. And they're like, haven't you heard of our Continuum product line? I'm like, that's ARM-based. That's not a PC. And, you know, I've been using Windows since Windows 3.1. And for me, Windows runs x86, or it's not really Windows. It's something else. And so he and I went back and forth a little bit, and I demoed the switching between the Android and the Windows, and they wanted to see the mouse moving around, make sure I wasn't just flipping some JPEG or something back and forth. So we did that for them. And then they were asking me a lot of questions like, well, are there any technical hurdles to putting an x86 CPU in a phone? I said, no, and it's not been for a while. So they asked me if it was patented and then left. So I didn't see them again. So
if we see that rumored Surface phone and it looks a lot like a Nitro Duo, we'll know what's happening here, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, no, I mean, and what they've been doing with Continuum is really neat, you know, in terms of having your phone be something that you can dock to a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor and run apps. But as of right now, as of early 2016, Continuum for phone means running their universal Windows app, which there are millions of Windows apps that don't support that platform. And it means running them in full screen mode. So if you want to be able to run multiple apps side by side and sort of do what you would do with a laptop or a desktop computer, you can't do that with Continuum for phones. So it's bridging the gap, but it's like the bridge only goes partway there.
Right. It just gets you partway there. And for a user, that especially someone that's very familiar with their Android phone and also uses their PC, because it doesn't get you all the way across the bridge, it's not really useful at all. It really has to go the whole way. It has to become a PC, or it should just remain Android. I don't think Windows Mobile is just really going to be something that's going to compete with Android.
The prototype Lewis brought to the Consumer Electronics Show featured an Intel Atom Bay Trail processor, 4 gigabytes of RAM, and 256 gigabytes of solid-state storage for the Windows computer. The Android side had a Freescale IMX6 quad-core ARM Cortex A9 processor, 2 gigabytes of memory, and an 8 gigabyte SD card. Lewis put the two separate computer boards into a single case with a 5-inch, 800 by 480 pixel display, and USB ports. And you can connect the Nitro Duo to a desktop dock to get Ethernet and HDMI ports that let you connect a keyboard and mouse and external display and use the system like a desktop computer. When I wrote about the Nitro Duo for Lilliputing, some readers said that they liked the idea, but it's kind of chunky. It has a low-resolution screen. It has old processors. Lewis is hoping to launch a crowdfunding campaign for the project soon, and he says the final model might have better hardware.
Those are some pieces of hardware that I could get my hands on in a matter of a few months, very quickly. And a lot of the computer systems that I do don't have a display on them. They're just meant to connect to a remote panel or a remote terminal, or they have no display at all. So I had to find a display fairly quickly that was small. And so the component specs that you saw were relatively driven by the fact that I could get that hardware fairly fast and get it put together in a form factor. And so the idea was, hey, have a look at the concept. And if you like it, we can move up to a more modern processor and a better display for a production version. But take a look at it as a concept and see, is this something that you would find useful to you in your everyday life? So.
Right. If you're going to make 10 million of them, then sure, you could get your hands on high-resolution IPS displays and bleeding-edge processors. But as of right now, as you mentioned, there are more than a million Android apps that are already touch-friendly, smartphone-friendly applications. And then there's millions of Windows apps that can run on x86 processors. And so your device sort of bridges those. Now, that said, I mean, do you imagine this as being sort of a portable device people can use when they're traveling or doing presentations or other things? Or is this something that you would ever imagine somebody could actually just use as their only computer?
That's what my goal was to make it my only computer. I really wanted to try to put something in there. We've even discussed going and stepping up to the Skylake i3 and trying to make it really something that could replace the computer altogether and combine it into the phone. And the only thing you would have at your office or home would be a docking station. And it's just nothing more than a holder with some ports on it that would break out, you know, your HDMI monitor and Ethernet and USB ports to make it a more traditional PC when docked, yet still have the Android functionality operating on you. And so one of the things we and this is one of the time factor, we wanted to demo and we didn't have time to get it, the bugs worked out of it, was the technology we have does support is to do things like picture-in-picture. And this is where our Xilinx FPGA comes in and really helps us out to merge these two systems into one seamless system, is that you can, say, for instance, put the Windows desktop up on your monitor and then window in, as say a phone call comes in, window in the Android desktop, literally just pops up on their screen when you get a phone call or a text message or something like that. And it not involved the Windows operating system at all. It's just literally a picture popped in your window. Microsoft doesn't even know it's there. It's just all controlled by the FPGA. And so that would make it really seamless because you wouldn't have to worry about, is there a CPU involved doing that and slowing things down and maybe crashing a program you're running on the Windows side while this Android decides to pop in and tell you there's a text message coming. So those are the features that the technology is there. We just need some coding to get done.
So what's next? Are you still working on this? Are you going to be continuing to demo it, or was the limited reception sort of like, it was a good idea, but now we're done?
We were somewhat disappointed that the reception was somewhat limited because there just wasn't that many people that came by the booth said, I really like this. I want it. It was really fascinating to see when they did come by the booth. It's like I didn't even have to explain to them what it was. As soon as I told them it's Windows and Android together, like, when can I buy one? The ones that I had to explain it to were the ones that needed more convincing, and they weren't necessarily all that enthusiastic about it. So this definitely is it's a niche thing, and it would be a niche type product. It might become more widely adaptable as people see the true functionality of it in a docking station environment and a mobile and a non-mobile environment, how I can switch between the two and provide that PC with the smartphone. I think it's really the only way you're going to really eliminate the PC is to just put it in the phone. To me, that is the future for the PC, is to end up in the phone, or it will eventually die out. So
are you going to be part of that, making the PC disappear, or are you going to sort of wait and see?
Yeah, well, we hope so. So what we're doing right now is we're finishing some of the debug that we didn't get a chance to do before the show. So we're working on the touch panel, working on getting the driver working. What we're thinking about doing is a Indiegogo campaign, and we're just trying to see if we can get the rest of these things working. How much would the product cost, you know, for us to build? As a small operator, You know, when LG decides to build something, they order 10 million pieces and get a price that's almost unbeatable versus a small time operator trying to do it in 10,000 pieces. You know, you don't get that price break. And so it ends up being a bit more expensive. And sometimes that's hard to convey to. So most of my work is in business to business, and they understand that. Yeah, okay, you're paying X amount of dollars for the module, for these components, and, you know, and here's the price, the final price to them. The consumer doesn't quite have that, you know, they don't have that exposure to the inner workings of trying to put together a custom piece of hardware. They only see what's on the shelf, and they compare what you are building compared to what they can get, say, at Best Buy or Fry's Electronics or, you know, what LG or Samsung is offering them in the $299, $399 price range. And it's very hard to do that for a small operator to get close to those kind of prices. So we've been thinking in the $799, $899 that would come with a docking station and it would come loaded with, you know, Windows 10 and the latest version of KitKat and probably be Cherry Trail. We've been still kicking around the idea of doing an i3, but the first version, it might be Cherry Trail.
And you just said the latest version of KitKat. You mean the latest version of Android?
I'm sorry, the latest version of Android.
Right, because I know the early prototype is running KitKat, but
yeah,
you could
it was
upgrade
running
it to Lollipop or Marshmallow or whatever.
Yeah, yep. So, and the other versions were available. There is a little bit of work to do to get it to drive the LCD, and we just didn't have the time to load the latest version of Android and make certain it was working together with the other components prior to the show. So we loaded on there what we knew worked and went with it. So
on the one hand, I mean, clearly $799 is a lot of money for people who are used to buying a phone for $200 or $300.
Right.
But there's really nothing else that's quite like this. I mean, you could buy a laptop, and you can get a Bay Trail laptop. You can get something with an Intel Bay Trail or Atom Trail,
right,
or a Cherry Trail processor, and spend $200-$300 on a laptop,
right,
and then you spend a couple $100 on a phone, and you've saved some money. But you've got multiple devices to lug around and different batteries to worry about, and you have to open this up and turn that on and unlock that. This is a single device solution. And really there's, you know, it's been like 10 years, I think, since we've seen something running a full version of Windows on something this small. It was back in the UMPC, the ultra mobile PC days, before phones took off, that Microsoft was pushing this form factor. These days, they're not really pushing this. They're like, well, there's a phone version, there's a tablet version. And so this is really nothing else out there.
Yeah, with my previous company, we developed a UMPC called Switchback. And this was with Black Diamond. And during that time, you could get the Panasonic, I think it was, I don't remember what it was called, a Q1 or something like that. And then there was the OQO. And so there was a few UMPCs available during those days. And you're right, they seem to have died off when the smartphone really got popular. It just seemed to, it came to take those tasks. And I think the biggest detractor for the UMPC back in those days, and probably one of the things that kind of led to its demise, was the fact that most of them didn't have any way to dock them. So it couldn't really take your PC, the necessity of having that PC away, because there was no way to dock it, and it didn't have a powerful enough processor to really kind of do those tasks. So that's changed. So now you can get a powerful enough processor in a UMPC form factor. And with a docking station, it should be able to do everything your PC does and literally be that replacement computer in a small. And by the way, why not just put the phone in there too? So,
right. And you know, I guess like those UMPCs, they were $1,000 devices that didn't really replace anything you already had.
Right, right. They were kind of a cool gadget, maybe in certain business applications where we got a lot of traction because they were rugged. We would get a lot of traction in businesses like forestry service where they need a ruggedized computer, or the military, we're taking them into the field, maybe to maintenance equipment or situational awareness, where it's ruggedized and it was very tiny and it could hook up to other types of devices. And it gave them a sort of computer in the field, but they were still carrying around their laptops. So it didn't replace that need.
There are a few things Lewis needs to decide before launching his crowdfunding campaign. He'd like to offer a model that works as a phone on major US networks, but that'll take some work. He also has to decide whether he wants to ship a device with two separate boards, one for the Windows PC and another one for Android, or with a custom-designed single board that has all the chips, memory, and everything else on a single piece. That second option would make the Nitro Duo thinner, but he kind of likes the existing setup because it makes it easy to upgrade the Nitro Duo using off-the-shelf parts.
In its present form, you could upgrade the Intel CPU module later, and any mini express card, form factor, circuit card would bolt right in because it's an industry standard. And the same side over on the ARM side, it uses what's called MicroSOM, and any form factor compatible with what we have today, you could snap it right in. And so future, you could, in a sense, upgrade it. It follows that desktop PC lineage, and that you can upgrade those components. The drawback to that is it makes it a bit more expensive, because you've got all these different components you have to purchase rather than designing them as chips on board. And then it makes it a little thicker, because it's a multi-card solution versus a single board design that you would typically, so if you cracked open your smartphone, you would just find one circuit board and all the chips on that. So it definitely makes it very fast time to produce a prototype for a concept, but it does make it a little bit thicker and heavier for a final product. So there's some give and take there. If you'd like it to stay as that sort of maybe upgradable multi-card solution, it would probably not get below 22 millimeters. But as a single board version, we could probably get it down to around, 15 or 16 millimeters.
And so this, it opens the door to not only could you at some point decide in the future that, well, we're going to, right now we're thinking Intel Atom processor and the Freescale processor, but in the future you could say a Core M processor, a Core i3 processor, something else. But it also opens the door, if you stick with this solution, this multi-board solution, for people buying today's version. And even if you never offer an upgrade, they might be able down the road to do it themselves if they're the DIY kind of people.
Yeah. Yes, you could, in a sense, crack it open, and we could put a door on it, and you could pop off the the Intel module and buy another replacement from a number of vendors that sell those ETX modules, and upgrade your phone like you would your PC. We kind of like that idea ourselves. The reaction we were getting at the show, a lot of people, is the shock factor of how thick it was, right? So that's the trade-off, right? So if we make it all single board, you won't be able to upgrade it or use your off-the-shelf hard drive, but it would be thin. So
Shane Lewis is CEO of SL Interface and creator of the Nitro Duo portable computer concept. You can find pictures and more details at sl-interface.com and at lilliputing.com. It used to be easy to upgrade computers. If you needed a new processor, hard drive, or memory for your desktop, you could just open the case, take out the old hardware, and slap in something new. But these days, there are plenty of laptops, tablets, and phones that don't even have replaceable batteries, let alone processors. If you want to upgrade, you often have to buy a whole new device. But Luke Kenneth Casson-Layton wants to change that. For the past few years, he's been developing a modular, upgradable PC system that could one day make it possible to upgrade the guts of your laptop, tablet, or desktop without buying a new screen, keyboard, or case. We caught up with him by phone ahead of the Fosdem conference in Brussels.
So if you buy a product which is after two years, you get a virus on it or it seems a bit slow, so you throw it away and buy a new one, then you've just wasted a perfectly good machine. And people say this, we got a virus, I needed a new machine, so I threw the old one away because it was about time to upgrade. So the environmental impact of what you're doing is really quite a lot. What if you could just, instead of throwing away your $300, $400, $500 US laptop, you could just buy a CPU card upgrade for $50 and keep on doing that year after year?
Layton calls that CPU card an EOMA 68 card. It's about a fifth of an inch thick and weighs about an ounce and a half. It's based on the design of the PC cards from the 90s, those little credit card-sized things that you could slide into a laptop to add a modem or extra storage. But EOMA 68 cards aren't just expansion cards. They're basically tiny computers that just don't have a screen or keyboard of their own.
It's a simple concept. Like when you get a memory card for your camera. Imagine now that in that card, it's actually got the processor, the memory, and some storage, some NAND flash, and maybe a micro SD and an HDMI and everything like that. So it is quite literally a fully functioning computer in its own right. And the one that I've got at the moment, the Allwinner A21, actually can be powered by USB on the go and be plugged into your HDMI television. So you can actually buy just that on its own, and you'd need a USB powered hub, and you'd be able to plug in keyboard and mouse and use it as a fully functioning computer in its own right. But if you then wanted to plug it into a laptop or a tablet or a micro desktop, or later on, there's a whole product range that I've got designed, which includes like digital SLR cameras. So you don't just pop out the memory card, you pop out the computer card. You don't remove the memory card to put it into your laptop to edit the files to then to email them. You just plug in a USB keyboard and an HDMI monitor directly into the side of the computer card. It's still plugged into the camera. Edit the software and email it out directly from there. Isn't that cool?
So some people might be familiar with the idea of like a Raspberry Pi, which is also a very small sort of self-contained computer. And we've seen some people do things like that, where they take a Raspberry Pi and build a laptop around it or build a tablet around it. But it's always a kind of complicated process. You have to plug in a bunch of wires. You need to learn a lot about GPIO pins. This is much more of at least the idea behind this is more of a plug-and-play kind of system, right?
Exactly. All right, so I've designed a standard which has up to USB 3.1, so it's like got a huge life cycle ahead of it. The nice thing is, because it's packaged in that simple format, you can literally put it in your wallet. You can sell them on eBay. You don't have to spend the money on throwing them away. You can also, if you have a family that's not got enough money to buy a laptop per person, you can buy one laptop base or one tablet base and share it between the four people. So it ends all of the arguments in a household about, no, son, you can't use my laptop because you might damage it with your viruses from your games, etc., that you keep downloading. Business users will be able to buy two cards, one for work and one for personal use, so that the companies don't gain access to their personal email. And so if you buy a tablet and a laptop, people very, very rarely use all the tablet and laptop and the desktop and everything. People very, very rarely use all of those all at once. And if so, the only reason is that they switch all of them on is to transfer files between one and the other. Well, what if you could save 40% on cost of products by having one CPU card and one tablet and one thing, and just take the CPU card out and put it into the laptop, or take it out and put it into the desktop, whatever it suited you think.
Layton's been working on this platform for years. In 2013, he was working with partners on a tablet and a small desktop computer that would run Linux-based software and feature EOMA 68 PC cards, but those plans fell through. Now Layton's hoping to ship the first EOMA 68 cards and compatible devices in 2016. The plan is to launch a crowdfunding campaign in the first quarter of the year and ship products sometime around August. The campaign will help raise money to produce the hardware, but much of the design work is already done, and Layton says the laptop project has been sponsored by Think Penguin, a company that sells laptops that run free and open source software, and which is interested in the EOMA 68 Libre laptop because it'll be one of the first laptops in years that will be able to work without any proprietary closed source code.
We're making a budget laptop as the first one where you can actually read the screen. So that's why we picked a 15-inch size. We've picked the 1366 by 768 resolution because those are the screens that you get in the $200 laptops at Walmart. So they're very, very common and they're very low cost, because the whole idea of this project is it's designed for mass volume. So I have to use parts that are easy for me to get hold of in large volume at some point in the near future. So it's a 15-inch screen, 1366 by 768, full-size keyboard. The battery is a 10-amp-hour e-bike battery, which was $8 from a company in Hong Kong, whereas the standard laptop battery's equivalent to that would be $25. So I've made a sort of a series of decisions out of necessity to creativity to put this whole thing together. The casework is 3D printed the moment in this prototype. So I've done all of the edges, but then that leaves a whole stack of spaces in between, which I wasn't going to print a whole stack of rectangles of plastic on my 3D printer. It's a waste of plastic. Well, it turns out if you scale that up economically, it is a waste of plastic. So I went, what can I do instead? Let's put some bamboo plywood in the middle. So it's sort of accidental ecological design.
So this is clearly a prototype, and even though you're using inexpensive parts, when you count the time, the labor, you know, the sourcing, I'm sure it's not exactly cheap. But the idea is that this could all lead to a laptop that could be sold with this upgradable CPU card for how much money?
Maybe $300.
Okay, so competitive with a Chromebook or a low cost laptop.
Exactly. Now, given that you've got the casework of the CPU card and the socket that it goes into, so you can push the button on the side, realistically, it's not going to be completely competitive with those things, But that's okay, because long term you save some money on the fact that you don't, in 2-3 years time, you don't have to throw it away and buy another $200-$300 laptop, throwing that stuff into landfill. You just buy a $50 CPU card, or you go onto eBay or Amazon and buy last year's CPU card for $10 or $20.
So while you're approaching this from the perspective of somebody who's already, you know, past knee deep, I think, in the free Libre software community. And that's part of the reason I think you're going with ARM and MIPS-based processors initially as opposed to Intel-based processors. The idea of these PC cards is clearly a little bit more agnostic than that. It can run all sorts of software. It can run all sorts of they can work with different types of chips as long as they fit into the form factor, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I've got a guy whose team in Spain who are designing a handheld game console. They will do a special operating system installed on the CPU card, which has a games operating system on it. So be able to change the identity of your computer, right? So you can have an Android CPU card, a work CPU card, a Windows one, a Chrome OS one. You'd be able to try these out at very low financial cost, because you'd be able to buy them on secondhand on eBay. You go, oh yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'll take that. It's only $20 secondhand. Yeah, fine, no problem. And in a shop, imagine a shop. You go into the thing, say, oh, so it's, thank you very much for sending me that laptop. Yeah, it's absolutely great. I'll take some of the USB sticks. And the guy says, oh, incidentally, you know that Yama 68 laptop you bought from me last year? We've got a new CPU card coming. Would you like to try it out? And the guy goes, sure, no problem. Pushes the button, pops the CPU card out, puts it in his wallet safe, knowing that all of his application data are not going to be affected by trying out the sales upgrade. Put the thing in there and try it out. So then he goes, oh, fantastic, I'll buy it, I'll take it, right? It's only $50. It's not like you're selling an entire new machine. And then he goes, I put all my data and stuff on it, and the applications I've got, they're not compatible. Well, that's okay. Just pop out the new card, put the old one back in, carry on working, and wait a few months for the compatibility to sort itself out of the software writers for all the apps that you wrote to work. Have you ever tried downgrading your phone or your laptop just because some programs didn't work?
Yeah, they don't make it easy. They don't make it easy.
No. Upgrades are fine. Downgrades are a total wipe of the entire operating system. It's a pain in the ass. You've got to treat it as a disaster recovery event.
Layton isn't the only person working on modular electronics. Google's Project Aura, for example, is an effort to build a modular smartphone. Want a new processor, more storage, a better camera? Maybe one day you'll be able to buy just those parts without getting a whole new phone. But Layton says he hasn't found anyone else working on something quite like Yoma 68.
I looked around. I studied this. I said, do I actually really need to make a modular standard and design from scratch entire products? And shockingly, the answer was, yeah, I do. Nobody is doing this. Not even Google with Project Aura is targeting general products. Google is targeting smartphones. They're not targeting laptops, tablets, desktop computers, handheld GPS, handheld game consoles, etc., like I am.
Now, that said, what you wind up with is, you started working on a PC card using the all-winner A20 processor, which at the time that it came out, it was relatively easy to work with, I guess, in terms of getting open source software, free and open source software to work on it. But now the all-winner A20 has been, all-winner has come out with so many different processors since then. MediaTek seems to have a new processor every week. So by the time you're ready to mass produce these things, it'll be, 16 generations old.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. And here's why. It's because, two reasons. One is that all-winner processor is actually extremely low power. It's for performance per watt. It's good enough. It runs LibreOffice, it runs Firefox, it runs all the stuff, and it's actually, it can run virtual operating systems as well. I don't know if many people are aware of that. So you can actually run two operating systems at once on it or more. Secondly, because of the upgradability and the standard that I've created, I can upgrade to a better processor once I've got these first products out the door. And I am currently working on a quad-core design using the all-winner A64. And I'm talking to Intel about using one of their ultra-portable tablet processors. So the Ingenic one is for free software endorsability, so that I can get an RIS, Respect Your Freedom, certificate on that. the Allwyn A21 is what I used at the time as a proof of concept. For software developers and people, it's quite important that we have something that hits the street first of all, so that people can help me to develop the software and move things forward, so that in a couple of years' time, there will be an 8-core version coming out, this with 4G memory. There will be, ultimately, I want this to become large enough so that even Apple can't ignore it anymore and have to come out with an Apple CPU card.
But before that happens, Leighton needs to get his first devices out the door. He plans to offer several different types of products through a crowdfunding campaign.
I'm doing four products, a matrix of four products. I'm doing a micro desktop, right, which is a small desktop unit. It'll just have two USB, a VGA port, a micro SD, and power. That's it. Very, very basic. But the point is that it's desktop bound and it's very low cost. When it ends up in sort of mass volume, it'll easily be end up at like $15. But it's just a base. It's a chassis, right? And then there's this laptop, a 15-inch laptop. And then there'll be the two CPU cards. There'll be the Ingenic one, and then there'll be the Allwyn dual core A21.
So the short-term goal is sell a couple of hundred, show that there's interest, get things going, raise a little bit of money, and then start moving on to the next version and the next version and the next version.
Absolutely. Ramp it up in scale. So we'll do like 100, 250, then go 2,500, which would be the point at which the average person and very early adopters will be able to buy one that would actually be user-friendly. Everything will just work. Once the bugs are ironed out in that version, then we'll go to like the 10K to 50K quantities and beyond.
And what's the design process like? Are you just sort of sitting there, you know, conceptualizing the whole thing and then asking somebody else to put it together? Or how does that work?
I'm on a segmented sleep pattern at the moment from Europe because I've got to deal with people from the US and in China. So I basically go to sleep about 8 o'clock in the evening and wake up at about midnight or 1 in the morning, talk to people in China for a couple, 2 to 3, 4 hours, and then go back to sleep again sometime 4 in the morning and wake up at 2 in the afternoon. thing. So that's why I've got to go over to Taiwan, because I've got to be on the GMT plus 8 time zone in order to be able to pop over to Hong Kong and to Shenzhen and speak to people directly.
Part of what makes all this possible, I think, is sort of the changing relationships between these, you know, small manufacturers in China. We're seeing a lot of people on Kickstarter and Indiegogo and CrowdSupply who are saying, I want to create 200 of something really original, and I can find some, you know, company that's willing to actually manufacture these. It won't be quite as cheap as it could be, but we can make it.
Now, it's very interesting you should say that, because when I first started talking to China companies over things, they would say, how many do you want to buy? How many do you want to make? And they were expecting like 10,000, you know. And I'd say, oh, I want to do an exponential curve, a careful, controlled ramp up of like doing 5, 25, then 200, and then 2,500. And I wouldn't hear back from them. But slowly, they got the message.
Your background is as a software developer, not a hardware guy, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And I imagine when you started getting into this, in terms of manufacturing, that's not something you had large-scale manufacturing experience.
Not at all. That I've had to learn on the fly, and it is extraordinary. You need an extraordinarily large amount of patience. But I've basically applied the same sort of water flows downhill technique of parallel messages out to things in different creative routes to find the ways that work, and I finally found them. And so I come up with some rules. You don't sign NDAs with companies. You go out on the internet, you find the part that you need that is mass volume produced, that has lots of suppliers on Alibaba, AliExpress, Taobao, blah blah blah, etc., China IC.net and China Mart and things. You check that it's available in huge volumes. You find the data sheet on random websites, and that way you can pretty much guarantee that it's A, it's mass volume, B, there's lots of companies using it, C, the price is going to be cheap, and D, there's no huge risk of it going end of life. So I applied that sort of rule to as many of the components as I possibly could, and it seems to have worked out well. My goal is to be the designer and the guardian of the OMA 68 interface, using trademarks to protect the standard so that people can know that when they buy compatible products, they are definitely compatible. Now, I don't mind if companies pay me a single lump sum to certify their products as being compatible with the OMA 68 standard. So they can make all the much profit and thing. I will not be charging those companies royalties. It will be a one-off lump sum to certify the things. Now, obviously, as the number of products come in, the number of things that I'm going to have to test is going to go up and up. So it'll we'll work it out. But it's very, very important that the products are safe. And this is not like software. Right? You can actually plug things in. My nightmare is that some idiot in China or wherever it is decides, oh, that's a good idea. Let's copy the concept, uses the same form factor, which is the old legacy PC cards, make something that is so completely incompatible that when somebody goes and plugs it into an Xiaomi 68 product, it short-circuits the battery and the thing catches fire. That is my nightmare when it brings the entire project into disrepute.
How long have you been working on this now?
5 years.
So how do you feel right now, knowing that you're this close to being able to ship something?
Busy, because it's not a short-term project. Once I've got these first products out, I have another decade of keeping an eye on it to make sure that more products come out, more CPUs come out, so that people know that they will have a commitment of a long-term thing. The environmental impact and the economic saving of this project only work if it is long-term. So that is what I'm committed to. So most people would, you know, celebrate and go, hooray, I sold a whole stack of stuff on a crowdfunding site. Brilliant. The thing, I can stop now. I can't. It's just one step. One step on the road.
Luke Kenneth Kasson-Layton is the creator of the Xiaomi 68 platform for PC cards. You can find more details at his website, rhombus-tech.net. Luke, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for the first episode of LPX. You can find out more about the program and about today's guest at lpxshow.com. That's also a great place to find links to like us on Facebook, subscribe on iTunes, and all that other fun stuff. If you like the show, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your enemies, I won't judge. And if you have ideas for people you think we should interview for future episodes, you can also find contact information at lpxshow.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Brad Linder.